So a few things played into my topic tonight. The topic is the greater self, which is calling us. First of all, it's our first sangha in the month of April, and April is from the Latin aprio, to open up. And so thinking about what does it mean for us to open up. Yesterday, of course, was Easter, you know, in the Christian story, this breakthrough kind of experienced, you know, the person of Jesus being transfigured into a new form after death. And also, as you may know, yesterday was the anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And just thinking of, you know, his speech about being to the mountaintop the night before he died, and just that the greatness at the end of his life. And so thinking about our greatness and the greatness that calls us. And I want to talk about this idea of calling for a second, because it's, I think in particular the Christian baggage of this culture, you know, we get this idea that, you know, an old man in the sky is calling us or telling us, you know, you need to be this way, or, you know, that sort of thing. And I would say I understand it a very different way. I would phrase it in terms of the gravitational pull of our own wholeness, the way our own wholeness draws us. And as I get older, I just see this in a pattern throughout my life. You know, all the places that where I strive and shine, and all the places where I completely fail and fall flat on my face, they're all part of this pattern of being pulled toward wholeness. Jung talked about how any neurosis, you know, is an attempt of the psyche to move toward wholeness. It might be attempting with completely infantile, inappropriate strategies, but it's trying to get toward wholeness. And so just thinking about this, you know, this gravitational pull deep into our body, into the core of our being. And the more we can align with that, the more we can move toward our own greatness and toward our own wholeness. And I'll also say, you know, that I think there's a bit of a paradox from the point of view of Buddhism, like, why would we want to make ourselves bigger when the point is to renounce ourselves, you know? Like, it seems almost contradictory. And there's a few things I want to say about that. First of all, you can't give away anything that you don't have, you know? And in order to renounce the self, I really have to first be in full possession of the self. And also, I would say the move toward our greater self is very much a movement of letting go, surrender, allowing, you know. It's not a process of achieving more and controlling more, that sort of thing. It's very much a process of letting go. So in fact, the move toward the greater self is actually moves in the same direction of renunciation of the self. You know, it's paradoxical. You know, it might appear that the smaller self, the neurotic self, is, well, it's smaller, so isn't that closer to Buddhahood because it's smaller? But from the point of view, you know, between the neurotic self and enlightenment, the neurotic self would have to face everything that it most fears and everything it most doesn't want to face, you know? And so it's almost, you know, it's like they say about Boston driving, you know, can't get there from here, you know, that kind of thing. So to talk about wholeness, I want to share a quote. And this is a very famous quote. I'll put the quote in the chat. It's also on the quote sheet. It's a long quote. So I'll read it. Our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do. We are born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we're liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. These are words of Marianne Williamson, and they were actually quoted in Nelson Mandela's inaugural address. And what fascinates me about the quote in many ways, I've thought about this quote for years, it begins with a kind of depth charge, and then it has all these affirmations that come after it, and so the affirmations are lovely. But the depth charge at the beginning, our deepest fear is that we are powerful. Think about that for a second. Our core, rawest fear is that we're powerful. You know, and why is that? You know, because naively, you know, ego would say, yeah, sure, I'd love to have more power. You know, like, why is that? Why would that be such a deep fear? And I think there are a few reasons why it's a deep fear. The first has to do with responsibility. And it's funny because, of course, I'm going to go out a limb and just assume everyone here, you know, we're reasonably responsible people. You know, we're not living absolutely irresponsible lives. You know, we're on board with this idea that responsibility is a good thing. So why would we fear responsibility? And it's very tricky because all the responsibilities that I acknowledge, all the responsibilities that I'm just very clear on, yeah, that's my responsibility, either I have to live up to it, or if I don't, I feel out of integrity. I feel like, all right, I dropped the ball. I should have done that and I didn't, you know. And so it's a real claim on me when I'm acknowledging something as a responsibility. Now, of course, on top of that, there are also all the neurotic things that I might take responsibility for that I have no business taking responsibility and actually are not my responsibility. And then I spend more energy that way. But the move toward our greater self is necessarily going to involve taking on even more responsibility. And so even more claim on us. Among other things, moving toward the greater self would involve complete responsibility for what I feel. You know, and when I'm, you know, right after meditation, when I'm in a balanced place, all right, it's reasonably, it seems like a reasonable thing. All right, I could be responsible for what I feel. What about when I'm triggered? What about when I'm enraged? What about when I'm depressed or in the throes of anxiety? Can I be fully responsible for what I'm feeling? You know, and that's a hard thing. And that, you know, it's, the other side of that, you might say, is the part of us that wants to play victim, or the part of us that wants to have the self-pity or the sob story. And of course, that's extremely attractive because in all of us, we remember that time when we were infantile, when we were, you know, infants, when all I had to do was kick my legs and scream and all my needs would be satisfied, you know? And it's, you know, it's like almost like a part of us want, you know, how come I can't get that deal now? You know, that sort of thing. There's something extremely attractive about the victim narrative and about that, you know, it's a very seductive emotional pattern to fall into. you know, blaming other people for, you know, I feel this way because of what that other person did, because of this outside circumstance, because of blah, blah, blah. And so that I don't need to take responsibility for it. And it's a curious thing about the victim place, because there's the both the memory of the past, but there's also an intuition of innocence. And innocence is something that is characteristic of our greater self. And in fact, you know, to extrapolate even further, you know, when, you know, someone is a Buddha, well, then they sit still and all their needs are kind of satisfied already because, you know, they're not in any distress because they're enlightened, you know. And so it's almost like, the infantile place has this intuition of the end of the journey, which is part of what makes it so compelling. But of course, in the ego place, when I'm in ego, the last thing I can do is, you know, kick back and expect the world to take care of my needs for me, you know, that sort of thing. Part of it also has to do with control. And again, ego, when it thinks of the greater self, when it thinks of being more powerful, the ego thinks of control. It means, well, I can control more things if I have more power, you know. And moving toward our greatness is very much about letting go of control. Letting go of trying to manipulate the world around us. Letting go of trying to manipulate other people around us. Letting go of trying to manipulate what I feel. Simply allowing what I feel. Simply allowing the natural tidal flow of my body. And control taps into all kinds of deep fears, all kinds of second chakra level fears. The second chakra is about how we relate to the watery aspect of life, the uncontrollable flow of life, the fact that life is just in this constant, unpredictable, uncontrollable flow. If I'm extremely virtuosically healthy in my second chakra, then I can just go with the flow all the time, you know. But for people who have, for whatever reason, have been traumatized around that and are afraid of the flow, then there's tremendous holding on in the second chakra and reacting to the unpredictability of life with fear and control, rather than with being able to be with the flow. And I'd say another dimension of the fear of power has to do with vulnerability. We live in a culture that has tremendous fear of vulnerability. And part of moving toward our greater self is about opening up deeper levels of vulnerability, of feeling more, of occupying our body more fully, occupying our sensitivity more fully. Ultimately, vulnerability is a kind of knowing. You know, when I can rest in my vulnerability, I can know myself and know others around me in a much more profound, much more intimate way. The more comfortable I am with vulnerability, the more comfortable I am with simply the situation of being human. To be human, to be alive in a body in this world, is to be profoundly vulnerable. You know, and just to be able to rest in that and be at peace in that. A person who can be at peace in that can be a profound source of peace and healing for others. So at this point, I'll share the quote sheet. The top quote is the Marianne Williamson quote that I read earlier, which is from a book, Return to Love. It's her reflections on going through the Course in Miracles. The great preacher Philip Brooks said, "Do not pray for easier lives, but pray to be stronger men. Do not pray for tasks equal to your power, but pray for power equal to your tasks. Then the accomplishing of your work shall be of no miracle, but you shall be a miracle. Every day you shall wonder at yourself and the richness of the life which has come to you by the grace of God." Freud said, "Most people do not really want freedom, because freedom involves responsibility, and most people are frightened of responsibility." Very insightful. And Rilke said quite simply, "Ultimately, it is on our vulnerability that we depend." Henry Miller said, "I know what the greatest cure is, to give up, to relinquish, to surrender, so that our little hearts may beat in unison with the great heart of the world." Joseph Campbell said, "We must be willing to get rid of the life we've planned so as to have the life that is waiting for us. The old skin has to be shed before the new one can come." The Jungian psychologist Marion Woodman said, "Having a body that is like a musical instrument, open enough to be able to resonate, literally resonate with what is coming both from the inside and from the outside, so that one is able to surrender to the power greater than oneself." Ram Dass said, "The most exquisite paradox, as soon as you give it all up, you can have it all. As long as you want power, you can't have it. The minute you don't want power, you have more than you ever dreamed possible." Alice Walker said, "The most common way people give up their power is by thinking they don't have any." Julie Alvarez said, Each of us will have to make choices that allow us to be the largest versions of ourselves." Sharon Salzberg said, "No matter how much we want it to be otherwise, the truth is that we are not in control of the unfolding of our experiences." Then a long one from David White. "The ability to step down close to the stranger inside yourself. I always say that you meet the new you in the form of a stranger, and to begin with, when we meet that stranger, we always turn away from that person whom we have not quite gotten to know yet, saying, 'That can't be me,' partly because that new me is always broader, larger, occupies more ground, has a more powerful voice than we think we deserve for ourselves. So the invitation is to this other place. I often think the conversation always deepens, but sometimes it deepens without our participation, and we're just left on the outside looking in a frustrated way, in a non-participative way, then going through all the motions of feeling excluded. The ability to come close to yourself, to feel as if no matter the difficulties, you are living the life you were made for. You're living the conversation that is germane to the way that you were created, both originally and the way you were shaped by your growing into the world. And so I always say the conversation always deepens. It just depends on whether you want to be part of it or not. Either it deepens with us, or circumstances around us occur that pull the rug out from under us, and we're left falling toward the foundation we should have stepped toward voluntarily ourselves." There's a lot going on in that quote. Brené Brown said, "Vulnerability is the birthplace of love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, and creativity. It is a source of hope, empathy, accountability, and authenticity. If we want greater clarity in our purpose or deeper or more meaningful spiritual lives, vulnerability is the path." Lujan Matos said, "In most cases, it's not what you do, but what you didn't that delivers you to a state of personal power." Dr. Jacintha, I don't even know how to say that last name. Do not wait for the green light. You are the green light. Sunny Dawn Johnson says, we all have a story. The difference is, do you use your story to empower yourself, or do you use your story to keep yourself a victim? The question itself empowers you to change your life. Shannon Alder said, the only real conflict you will ever have in life won't be with others, but with yourself. Steve Maraboli said, how would your life be different if you stop validating your victim mentality? Let today be the day you shake off your self-defeating drama and embrace your innate ability to recover and achieve. Race Mamenikin said, what has happened to you is not your fault, but it is your responsibility. And Mark and Angel Chernoff said, when you stop worrying about what you cannot control, you have time to change the things you can control, and that changes everything.